Welcome to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with your host, Tom the Digital Architect Liebel. Are you tired of spending money on marketing efforts that produce little or no results? Unable to decide whether internet marketing is right for your business? Want to take your brand to the next level but are unsure of what steps to take next? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in their pursuit of growing a profitable business and learning actionable strategies on how they can outperform brands that are older, bigger, and stronger.
Hey guys, with me today I have Ezra Firestone. He is the founder of Smart Marketer and a leading world-class expert in e-commerce. And he used to do Think Act Get, which was one of my favorite shows.
Oh yeah, I'm so happy you like Think Act Get, man. I loved doing that show. It was probably my favorite show that I've ever done. I really enjoyed it, you know, because what it was about was it looked like my audience is a business audience. You know, it's about how to have an online venture go well. That's why people follow me. But that particular show kind of touched more on lifestyle and mindset and, you know, some of the stuff that I think really has you do well in business. And so I really enjoyed it. I'm glad you were a fan.
Yeah, it's super interesting because I'm usually super against all the lifestyle stuff. You know, like they just rub me the wrong way.
But don't they hand in hand, you know, like how you be in your life is kind of how you be in business, it seems, you know. I don't know.
I think the way you guys did it with James was just very different. And I think you touched on some topics and just maybe the way your flow was too. Because I, for some reason, I kept on thinking this was like your show, you know, just for some reason. I don't know.
I mean, well, the reason you probably thought it was my show is because I never shut up. I'm just constantly ranting. So, I had to apologize to James on several occasions. Like, man, I didn't even let you talk.
Which is okay. I mean, I listen to some of James' other stuff, you know, because he's
so good.
Yeah, he's so good at some other stuff. But I mean, just this show specifically, you know, like, there's no way he could have changed hosts, like co-hosts. There's no way. Like, I would have been like, yeah, it's done. I'm glad they just shut this off, you know? Like, don't ruin it. You had a good season or two, and you just finished it at the right time.
Well, I kind of felt like, you know, this is an interesting thing in business, and I actually just canceled my big event, man. Like, I put on an event every year for 500 e-commerce business owners, and it cost me about $300,000 in overhead to do it. And one of the things that I think that you've got to be willing to do in business is change direction when you're being sort of given data points that point to maybe you should change direction. And here's what I mean by that. I think a lot of people get stuck on this never give up thing, never give up, never give up, and they run themselves into the ground. I don't think you should give up. I think you should trade up. I think you should trade what you're doing for something that works better if the thing you're doing isn't working. And what I tell people is to give a new venture 18 months, because it takes 18 months. It takes you 6 to 8 months to get the thing off the ground, and it takes you 6 to 8 months to, 6 to 10 months, let's say, to get marketing going. And if you're like 18 months to 2 years into a venture and it's really not showing real signs of life, then I might consider potentially using that energy towards something else. And look, man, you've got, 40 to 80 hours of work energy per week. What are you going to put that towards? That's the question. And for me, I had to, you know, come to the decision that actually I think Think Act Get was extremely valuable. And now I think we've kind of covered what we came to cover, and let's move on. You know, my e-commerce All-Stars event was super fun and really valuable in a number of ways. And now I think it's probably not the right offer. So you got to be willing to change direction. You got to be nimble. It's one of the things that we as small business owners have on our side. We're nimble. We can quick change our budget from Facebook to Instagram. We can quick change our budget from YouTube to, Pinterest or whatever in a way that a big company can't.
Well, I liked it. It was like a little monologue. It took me back to those days.
Yeah, old school. Old school. Think I get.
It took me back to that. But yeah, you're right. You're right. The only thing which I think a lot of us find challenging is, you know, figuring out which idea to take, you know, when you do 18 to 24 months of work, you know, because I mean, that could easily derail your whole business, because that's a lot of energy going towards a new idea.
Yeah, well, I'm on the other flip side of what I just said was that, like, if you're not prepared to give a new venture 18 to 24 months, I don't think you're giving it the kind of time it needs to go from seed. Imagine a plant, right? You plant an avocado tree. My wife and I just grew one. And that thing takes like 2 years to get from a seed to like a little mini tree. And like, I feel like a business is the same way. For example, I'll give you a good example. I'm starting a new cosmetic business. It's an organic, you know, organic cosmetics for women between 25 and 40 years old, lots of colors, you know, it's really a cool brand, and it's taken me 3 to 4 months to find a manufacturer. It's going to take me 3 to 4 months to kind of build the initial website and do the sales copy and get all the imagery. It's going to take me, like, by the time I'm done, by the time I have an offer that is live, i.e. an e-commerce product that I can begin to sell, a branded product with images and logos and a website, and man, I'm really good at this. I'm spending 6 to 8 months. And then I think that offer, when I look at how I grow businesses online, which is through paid amplification, my viewpoint is that the best and most consistent and easiest way to grow a brand is simply to go to the traffic store and buy traffic from Facebook, from Instagram, from Pinterest, from YouTube, and send that visibility, that very targeted visibility. In my case, I'm going to be putting messages in front of women who are between 25 and 40 years old, who've shown an interest in the green movement, who shop at Whole Foods, who buy organic products, who have shown in their history that they're interested in this idea of sustainability. I'm going to be putting these messages in front of them. And you know what? It's going to take me a good 6 to 8 months probably to figure out the right kind of messaging, the right video to put in front of them, the right targeting to get the kind of data I need to know whether or not this thing is going to work. And it's probably going to cost me $5 to $10 grand in ads. So you've got to be prepared to invest that kind of money and that kind of time and energy, or you're not giving your venture due opportunity.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm glad you touched on paid advertising, because that's what I want to talk about. I want to talk about Instant Messenger with you. Just give us some tips, how you use it, any insights, how do you think we should be using it moving forward, especially, you know, with Facebook changing stuff. And
dude, Facebook stone cold shut down just now. I mean, this is like this just in. It happened a few days ago. You literally cannot connect a messenger bot to Facebook if you don't already have one connected. You for now, and it looks like for the next several weeks, companies like ManyChat, which is the company that I use that I'm also an investor in, mm-hmm. Companies like ChatFuel that allow you to send messages to business owners on Facebook, you can't do that right now because of the privacy concerns. You know, it's a hot button in our culture right now, Facebook and privacy laws and things like that. Yeah, so no new people at this time can connect a bot, which essentially is an instant messenger, to Facebook, to a Facebook fan page. Meaning you can't, if you have a Facebook fan page for your business and someone Facebook messages you, you can't then put them on an automation list and send them broadcast messages or automated messages or marketing through the Facebook Messenger channel if you don't already have it connected. And that is a really big deal and big change for a lot of these companies that were experiencing unparalleled growth. I mean, ManyChat went from October of 2016 having zero users to like the middle of 2017 having over 100,000 users. That growth rate is incredible. Let me give you context. I also sell a software as a service program for Shopify stores, where if you're a Shopify business owner, I've got software that helps you make your store do better. Basically, fundamentally, it just like bolts onto your store and helps you do a better job selling stuff, is at the end of the day what we do. And we started selling that in early 2016. So we've now been selling for about 2 years and we're at 4,000 paying members, okay? And that has been difficult to maintain the customer support, the ongoing development, the, you know, marketing, just to get to 4,000 users in 2 years. They went from zero to 100,000 in like 9 months. That's how hot Messenger as a topic is. I don't know how they did it as a company, because I can't fathom that amount of growth. It seems like it would just break everything, you know?
That's incredible.
Yeah.
But we can still advertise on Facebook, on Messenger. You know, we can still do it through their own platform. We just can't use bots for new users.
Well, you can run ads.
We can run ads, yeah.
You can run ads and communicate with people through Messenger a little bit, but you can't follow up with them, right?
Yeah, that's
you can't. It really limits what you can do. It really limits what you can do because Facebook's like tools that are inside of Facebook that are allowing you to communicate with folks through Messenger are not anywhere near as sophisticated and dynamic as things like ManyChat, right?
Yeah, that's true.
So I would, I mean, look, this is going to get sorted out, all right? It's like not going to be this way forever. It's going to be a couple weeks, you know.
That's interesting. Yeah. What are some ways that you use it well, though? Because if it does get sorted out, maybe, you know,
people. Yeah, look, here's what I think you should do. I think what Messenger does is it facilitates ultimately human conversations, right? Like it allows you to facilitate commerce in a direct sort of, like the way to think about Messenger actually is think about this. Imagine the immediacy of a text message and the responsiveness of a text message, right? So like people who get text messages, they look at them immediately, they open 99% of the text messages they get and they respond very quickly and they consume them very quickly. So Messenger offers that level of immediacy, but then it also offers the sort of value that email provides of dynamic behavioral communication. So basically being able to communicate with people based on whether or not they open the message, whether they click the message, whether they purchase something down the funnel. So there's behavioral automation available. And there is the design capability that email has, like GIFs and videos and images that text messages don't generally have. So you kind of get this best of both worlds where you've got sort of Facebook messaging, so you've got text messaging and email combined in one. And I think ultimately, if you look at society and how we communicate as a society, we have our most intimate conversations via text, right? We text our friends. We don't call people. We text our friends. We Instagram DM our friends. We're sharing, like messaging is how we're communicating. We're not calling and we're not emailing. And I think that really it's the future of commerce. I think what's going to happen is just like we see in China. China is a mobile-first economy. It has an application known as WeChat, W-E-C-H-A-T, and it's sort of like the Facebook Messenger of China. And what happened was WeChat opened up their API the way Facebook has now, and I'll explain that in a minute. So basically in China, like you purchase everything that you purchase your groceries and your stuff on Amazon through WeChat. You book your dates on Tinder and Bumble and plenty of fish on WeChat. You book your travel on WeChat. You do everything in this one app. And so if you notice Facebook Messenger, in New York City right now, inside of Facebook Messenger, you can order an Uber, you can order food, you can look at Yelp reviews. So Facebook has opened up its API to all these other applications. And basically what's gonna happen is all the applications that are on your phone, like as I look at my phone right now, I can see Skype, I can see Snapchat, I can see Spotify, I can see Yelp, I can see Zillow, which is a real estate thing, I can see Lyft, I can see Amazon, I can see QuickBooks, Venmo, Evernote, Delta Airlines app, all these different apps, they're all going to be consolidated down into the Facebook Messenger app. And you'll be accessing and dealing with everything that you do inside of that one application because it's just easier, right? And especially as we move away from smartphones, which is the next big jump, right? Like Apple, I predicted this would happen in 2015. It didn't. It happened in 2017. The first mass market wearable technology device hit the market, which was the Apple iWatch. Google tried with their glasses, but then everyone called them glass holes and they didn't like Google. Yeah, I don't know why they didn't like Google, but the Apple iWatch is the first mass market wearable technology, and it's a sign that we're moving towards a world of augmented reality and wearable technology where you're interfacing with the digital medium 24/7 rather than through a iPhone or smartphone device that you carry around with you. Smartphones are going to go away within the next 5 years, and everything that we're going to be doing as it relates to interfacing with the digital medium is going to be done through wearable technology and augmented reality, which is going to make it even more so that one application will rule them all rather than a million different applications that you got to sort around to find, right? It's all going to be in one place, and that one place is going to be Facebook Messenger. And so you as a business owner want to take advantage of the opportunity to build up a Messenger subscriber database while it's still cheap. I mean, what I did was I built an email list of 100,000 people on Google AdWords back in 2004, right? When buying an email address was 5 cents a pop. I made a bunch of cash and profit and built a business on Facebook ads in like 2010, 2011, when Facebook ads were uber cheap. Well, so like there's always a thing. There's always you've never missed the boat. There's always a new boat, right? After Facebook, it was Pinterest, and now Pinterest is getting expensive. But like now it's Facebook Messenger, and you have this opportunity to build this Messenger subscriber database for the next 2 years while it's really cheap before everyone catches on. While, you know, like what we're seeing with our numbers is that a Messenger subscriber is worth 5 to 10x of an email subscriber. So that's not going to be the case forever. And while you have that opportunity, I have a free webinar on this on my website that you can link to in this podcast, where I kind of bring you through all the Facebook Messenger stuff. But like, you ought to take advantage of it while you can. Now, the funny and sort of ironic part of this is Facebook just shut down access for everyone to Messenger, you know? So for the next couple of weeks, you don't actually have this opportunity, but you will again. You will again.
Yeah, it's definitely a cheaper way to get traffic, but there's also a lot of assumptions in there, you know, moving from old apps to Facebook. I don't know. I see a lot of people actually moving away from Facebook too, you know, especially users, not advertisers. We're all trying to get into Facebook, you know, even more, but users are deleting Facebook. Well, they're taking stuff off their phone. It's, you know, it's getting interesting.
I would argue that the problem that Facebook has is not a, users fleeing from their platform. It's a generational one. I would argue that the real problem that they face is the upcoming generation. So not the millennials. They got the millennials on lock. I think it's like 9 out of 10 millennials have Facebook, you know, right. Something like that. But it's the generation, the next generation, Generation Z, whatever they're called. They are not using Facebook. They're using all kinds of other apps that Facebook does not own, things like Snapchat and stuff like that. So I think the real problem they have is how to get a hold of this next generation.
Maybe. Even in mine, I'm seeing, well, maybe it's part of the crowd that I'm in. A lot of the guys, they also mess with crypto.
You're in a very sophisticated, think about your average bear, right? You're a marketer, you're a business owner, you're a tech guy, like you're in a very sophisticated community. And it's not really a real snapshot of the world, of the people who are using Facebook, right? Like, most people are just on there. They've got an average of like 200 friends, just them and their family. They're clicking on ads. See, what people don't realize is they think Facebook is a product that they use. No, you are the product.
I know that.
You are the product. And you've always been the product. And the fact that you're shocked by this means that you haven't been paying attention. Facebook is selling your data. That's how they make their money.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah, I mean, I always feel like I'm living in a bubble. But, you know, that bubble all, like, lives in Telegram and, you know, WhatsApp. Basically anything that's encrypted, right? So all my friends keep on telling me, like, oh, dude, let's not talk through Facebook. I mean, we're not saying anything bad, but they're like, oh, I don't want this info to be, you know...
Yeah.
In Facebook's history.
You're definitely
forever.
In a bubble. Yeah. 100%. 100%. I mean, and so am I, for that matter, right? But what I do is I read the trend reports, and the trend reports do not suggest that Facebook is losing users in droves. They in fact suggest that people are using it more than ever, which is crazy, but it's true. You know, most people are not paying attention. They read a news headline or something. They get outraged, but then they just go right back to their daily routine because they're bogged down with their 9 to 5 and their kids and their responsibilities. And like, they don't have the surplus. Like you live a really unique life, right? You work digitally. You have the laptop lifestyle. You work from your computer. Is that true?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Yeah.
Yeah. You have a kind of privilege and a space and time to think that most of the world does not have, you know, and it really is, I think, a power and a responsibility that we should wield with deliberacy, because like we have a kind of space and time to sort of think and act. and then it's what you get. Maybe I'm off on a tangent. I don't know. We can go back talking about Facebook Messenger.
Well, no, see, so the thing is, I get the responsibility, right? And I do know that marketers ruin everything, right? And, you know, when I see
people always say that, but I'm not sure that's the case.
Well,
but, you know,
yeah, overall,
I guess the point is, you know, a bunch of people spamming Messenger makes it not available for everyone. Is that kind of what we're getting at?
In a way, I'm just, you know, when I see my mom on Facebook, she just got on Facebook not too long ago, right? And I'm thinking about all these spammy tactics people are hitting with, and some of the stuff even I've seen on Messenger, some of these horrible marketing tactics, right? And I'm like,
right.
How can we do it properly and tell people that you can win? You know, you probably had some wins where you did not do shady stuff, right? Or
I mean, I don't do anything shady. Yeah. I'm trying to build real businesses,
yeah,
you know?
So that's what I mean, right? Like, if you can maybe give some tactics that really worked for you, people can maybe get an idea like, oh, wow, I can actually do it without ruining it for everybody.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, I think that ultimately people who build businesses that are based on spam tactics have – what they have is not a business. They have short-term cash flow. And the reason why all these spammers exist is because they're suckering people into giving them money for stuff that's not really that valuable. And they're not offering good refunds and things like that. They're using really hardcore sales tactics, but ultimately they're not building up a group of people who are engaged with them and valuing the conversation that's being had and are going to come back and do business again. They're one and done. So they're turn and burn, they're cash flow, they're limited time cash flow businesses. And look, man, here's what you have to understand is hungry people do funny things. I remember being 19 years old, totally broke, not knowing how I was going to pay my rent, working a full-time job, hustling, and frankly, kind of willing to play in the gray area. I was never doing anything that actively harmed anyone, but I was much more willing to play in a gray area, an area of like, gosh, how do I make some money and like, you know, remove the immediate pain that I feel in my life of like not knowing how I'm going to pay my rent. So you know, when you're hungry, you do funny stuff. But what happens is after you get to a point where like, okay, you've got some money coming in and you're like, you know, you're somewhat potentially settled or you're living with your parents or whatever, the pressure is off. From there, the question becomes, how do I build something that is sustainable, that is long-term, that's going to support me, that I can be proud of? Like you start asking different questions because you are not in a place of pain, right? So I always have compassion for the people that are doing the sketchy shit, or I try to look at like, what is it that is causing someone to behave this way? It's got to be some form of pain they're feeling. Not that I condone that behavior. Obviously, I think it's shitty behavior, but I can recognize having been in a spot where I have participated in not, I wouldn't call it spam or any underhanded tactics, but I've done some stuff online when I was a kid that I'm not 100% proud of that I would never do today to make a dollar, trying to just convince people to buy from me by like having crazy countdown timers or whatever it was, you know? So I don't know what we're talking about now. I'm totally. I'm not trying to defend the spammers. Please, like, let's just go on record. I am against spam and I am not defending spammers. So that's where I want to end that rant.
Dude, I'm loving the tangents though.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, you're just jumping off the cliff and then like, catch me now.
Yeah, please pull out a net and catch me. Stop me from you know. Yeah,
so I agree with you. We all, when we start out, we're willing to do shady shit a little bit, you know, and I've done it too. But see, I've done it on LinkedIn and I have zero feelings for LinkedIn. I feel like it's like a MySpace, you know, like I was like, whatever, LinkedIn. Doesn't matter, you know.
When you and I refer to like some like I think we should clarify shady. Like for example, MySpace had this thing, and this was actually where my. It's so funny you bring up MySpace. This is where what I'm labeling shady, for my behavior online as a youth came in was on MySpace. I had a tool that allowed me to mass broadcast people. I could mass broadcast profiles and tell them about different e-commerce stores and things that I had, which was against MySpace's terms of service to be able to contact users via their messaging platform. And it was something called like, I don't know what, remember what it was called, but I wasn't doing anything like that was having any harm on anyone or wasn't like making anyone mad, but it was against the rules and I shouldn't have been doing it. And I regret having done it now, but it wasn't like actively any kind of, you know, it was nothing that was too terrible. So, but yeah, MySpace, man.
Yeah, but you know, LinkedIn, I feel the same way because we just used super clickbaity articles and get people through some AdSense websites, you know, and we made a lot of money.
Oh, you guys were doing arbitrage.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, remember when I first got in around 2003, 2004, you know, what was really popular was that kind of thing where people would arbitrage Yahoo versus Google. So they would buy like Yahoo ads and they'd send people to a Google AdSense website and they'd spend less on Yahoo than Google. They'd spend less on Yahoo to get the click over there than Google would pay them when someone clicked. So they were basically arbitraging Yahoo traffic to Google traffic, if that makes sense.
Yeah, but see, that's the thing, right? Like with those, like you don't hurt anyone, right? It's like, okay, someone clicked over and just went to a different site.
You've done is you've found a loophole in the system and you're exploiting Google and Yahoo. So Google and Yahoo would beg to differ. I never did that shit, but yes, I hear you.
You know what I mean, though. And then, you know, even with Facebook ads, when all the shady stuff with crypto came out, I was like, I would just troll a lot of the ads that came up, right? So that was fun to me. I would just troll the shit out of them until they stopped showing up. But with Messenger, it's like that's the only place where I talk with like my friends and clients. It's like a super, like, I don't want to see any nonsense in there. And I feel like people spamming that and getting, you know, like someone like my mom, she doesn't even know there's ads possible. So she thinks like, right. Oh, someone just reached out to me. You know, right. So that's the part which makes me a little annoyed about the Messenger part. You know, where in other platforms, I would be just like, yeah, whatever.
Got it. Yeah. And, you know, boy, Messenger is such an intimate way of communicating. It's so like personal, right? I don't really want to receive a Facebook message from someone I don't know. It feels kind of weird, you know? And I know that that's coming. I know it's going to be like email at some point where you're just getting tons of brands just messaging you stuff, you know? Because Facebook's trying to make cash and that's a place that they can sell people, you know? But I do think that like if I was a business owner in today's world and I was looking at what kind of how I was going to allocate my advertising budget, I would definitely take 5 or 10% of my overall advertising budget and put it towards building an audience on Facebook Messenger. And I did a couple free videos. I did a video for Andrew Warner of Mixergy. You can Google Ezra Firestone Mixergy Messenger, and it's like a 2-hour amazing video about how to, you know, use Messenger tactics and grow a Messenger subscriber database. Tom, I actually got to jump, man.
Okay, all good.
Over the 30-minute mark, is there anything, any last-minute things you want to get from me while you got me here?
Sure. So since you're spending a lot of money on all these different platforms, are you seeing any other big wins on any other platforms other than Messenger, right? So like I see stuff with YouTube by targeting individual videos. Are you seeing anything like that that's not so commonly known?
So here's what's different about me than your average bear. I am at a place with my businesses and with my marketing where what I'm looking for is mass market offers that could go to 100 million or more, meaning like I want to be able to, the way I do it is I pick an age and a gender. I want to sell to every woman over 50, or I want an offer that's relevant to every woman over 25. So the way that I'm kind of advertising is not the way the business that I'm building today and that I have now are not niche specific businesses like I used to have, right? That were all about niche marketing and niche targeting and stuff like that. So ultimately, like what I'm looking at is where can I get scale and really good targeting and really good data tracking? And I'm finding, just like you mentioned, YouTube is a real good source of visibility and particularly a real good source for retargeting. So our flow looks like this. We drive all of our awareness traffic to get new people into our sales process on Facebook, and then we retarget everyone everywhere. We retarget them on YouTube, retarget them on the Google Display Network, retarget them on Instagram, Facebook, Pinterest, Twitter, et cetera, et cetera. And so we are playing with YouTube as an awareness channel, but currently we're having a lot more success with the Google Display Network for awareness than we are with YouTube. Facebook is still our number one source of new people into our sales funnel, and it is still, I think, the easiest to use self-serve advertising platform, meaning advertising platform that you engage with yourself. And I really could not recommend highly enough continuing to master Facebook ads, even though they're getting expensive. It's just still the best.
Got it. Thank you, Ezra. Where can people find you?
Smartmarketer.com. Thanks for the chat, man. I enjoyed it, and I look forward to chatting again sometime soon.
Yep. Take care, buddy.
Thanks for listening to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with Tom, the Digital Architect Liebel. For more tips, tricks, and interviews, come visit smartbrandmarketing.com. That's smartbrandmarketing.com. And join the newsletter. It's free.